Today is Monday, December the 2nd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, world leaders are gathering in Madrid for a crucial climate talks amid dire scientific reports.
We must stop our war against nature, and science tells us that we can do it.
A pivotal week ahead in the impeachment investigation into President Trump. Also ahead, the lyrics behind a unique and iconic song has died. It's all on today's International Edition. The House impeachment inquiry enters a pivotal stage this week, with investigators planning a vote on Tuesday to approve their report making the case for President Trump's removal from office as he decides whether to mount a defense before a likely Senate trial. We did learn the president and his attorney say they have no plans to testify in the hearing as requested or given the option by lawmakers. The draft report will be available to members of the House Intelligence Committee to view in a secure location before their planned vote, which would send their findings to the House Judiciary Committee to consider the actual charges. Republicans want Democratic Representative Adam Schiff, chair of the Intelligence Committee, to testify, though they have no power to compel him to do so, as they continue to try to cast the Democratic-led inquiry as skewed against the president. Republican Tom McClintock, a member of the House Judiciary Committee, tells ABC's This Week the process has not been fair and that they should be allowed to call any and all witnesses they want.
In a free society, the prosecution doesn't get to choose what witnesses the defense wishes to call. And yet that's what's been going on in the Intelligence Committee. And again, the question is going to be whether Jerry Nadler continues that sham in the judiciary hearings. When it goes over to the Senate, that's going to play a big role, I think, in the Senate's deliberations. They, I think, will insist on full due process rights, and that could blow up in the Democrats' faces.
Republicans also argue that Ukraine never actually conducted an investigation into former Vice President Joe Biden and his son, as the president had pursued. But Democrat Val Demings, a member of both the House and Intelligence and Judiciary Committees, speaking to ABC's This Week as well, says the argument that the president didn't succeed in getting Ukraine investigations doesn't change what happened.
The fact that the president got caught in the act does not relieve him of being held accountable for the wrongdoing.
Well, coming after 2 weeks of public testimony, the findings of the Intelligence Committee report are not known yet, but it is expected to mostly focus on whether Trump abused his office by withholding military aid approved by Congress as he pressed Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky to launch investigation into Trump's political rivals. Democrats say the report will speak for itself in laying out possible charges of bribery or, quote, high crimes and misdemeanors, the constitutional standard for impeachment. The process of impeachment could end the removal of Donald Trump as president of the United States. The hearings represent the beginning part of what's prescribed by the U.S. Constitution. In today's installment of American Impeachment, VOA's Steve Reddish takes you through the responsibilities of congressional lawmakers in the House of Representatives.
First steps toward any impeachment starts in the House of Representatives. It is the lower but larger of the two chambers of Congress, which passes laws and provides oversight of how government is run. Article 1, Section 2 of the U.S. Constitution says the House of Representatives shall have the sole power of impeachment. That is all the guidance given as to how to conduct an impeachment. No rules, no parameters.
The impeachment process at this point in time is like a grand jury process. What they're doing now is they're just gathering evidence. They're going to make charges.
And with vague standards of high crimes and misdemeanors, impeachment is a political process, not a criminal process.
Impeachment is an inherently political process. The actual existence of specific crimes is really up to the Congress to determine.
In 1868, it took just 3 days for the House to go from a committee resolution to the impeachment of President Andrew Johnson. When Johnson defied Congress by firing the Secretary of War, the House overwhelmingly voted to impeach. Investigations of a break-in at Democratic Party headquarters at the Watergate Hotel eventually led to an impeachment inquiry of President Richard Nixon, a Republican. Facing charges of obstruction of justice, misuse of power, and contempt of Congress, Nixon resigned in August 1974 before the full House could vote on articles of impeachment.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
Democrat Bill Clinton was impeached in 1998 for lying under oath about a sexual affair with a White House intern. But he remained in office because Clinton was acquitted after a trial in the Senate in 1999. Charges of perjury and obstruction of justice passed mostly along political party lines in the Republican-led House. Now, Democrats hold the House majority. Impeachment hearings against President Donald Trump center on his conduct of foreign policy, linking U.S. financial aid for Ukraine to a public announcement by Ukraine's president of an investigation into Democratic presidential candidate and former Vice President of the United States, Joe Biden, and Biden's son. If the House approves articles of impeachment against President Trump, the case goes to the upper chamber of Congress, the United States Senate, for a trial. A guilty verdict means removal of the president. Unlike the House, where Democrats are in control, President Trump's party has the majority in the Senate. Steve Reddish, VOA News.
Yet to reach a deal on.
Well, Democrats are aiming for a final vote or House vote by Christmas, which would set the stage for a likely Senate trial in January. Trump must then decide by Friday whether he will take advantage of due process protections afforded to him under House rules. But again, as we said, we did hear word late Sunday that he and his attorneys will testify. President Trump is heading to London this week to attend the North Atlantic Treaty Organization leaders' meeting. Forged at the start of the Cold War, NATO is celebrating its 70th anniversary, and the summit is designed to affirm the strength of the alliance. But European leaders are bracing for Trump ahead of the meeting as they continue to question Washington's commitment to NATO. White House correspondent Patsy Wittakuswara has this report from London.
Fighting continues in northeastern Syria following Turkey's invasion of Kurdish-held territory. President Donald Trump ordered American forces to leave in October without consulting NATO allies.
It's exactly in the wake of that decision that you had President Macron say what he said about the alliance being brain dead and referencing the lack of American leadership in the sense of leading a community and not just going out on your own.
Meanwhile, a simmering war between Russia and Ukraine has become the backdrop of Trump's impeachment. The two conflicts in Europe's eastern and southern flank further complicate Washington's already strained relations with other NATO members.
Leaders this side of the Atlantic are bracing for Donald Trump, whom they will meet at the NATO summit just outside of London this week. Trump no longer publicly says that NATO is obsolete and wants to leave it, but continues to slam member countries for not meeting NATO's 2% GDP defense spending target.
American officials have reassured European leaders of Washington's continued commitment, as shown by military reinforcement in NATO's eastern flank. But anxiety persists that under Trump, the U.S. is neglecting the alliance.
Some of them hoping that Trump will be out of office, you know, in a year's time. So the real fear is that Trump wins a second term.
Across Europe, responses differ. Paris is touting strategic autonomy, that Europe should take care of their own security. Warsaw is promoting a strategic embrace, developing close bilateral relationship with Trump to guarantee its own security.
And then you have Germany in the middle, which is, I think, a little bit divided between sort of Atlanticists on the one hand, who do believe in NATO and believe that NATO continues to be how the security of Europe should be guaranteed. And then on the other hand, post-Atlanticists who are sort of more on the French side of this argument. Europeans are very much arguing about that.
Among Europeans' goals this week, simply avoiding a Trump flare-up, like those that have happened in past meetings.
You can talk about all the things that they've done, and very smartly suggest that President Trump has generated the kind of pressure to make those things happen. So they can actually praise President Trump, even though this is very hard for them to do because of the personality.
Just days before the summit, NATO announced it had agreed to redistribute costs and reduce Washington's contribution to its relatively small central budget, a move aimed at placating Trump. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News, London.
Cambridge University has revealed that the woman stabbed to death in a London extremist attack was a former student. VOA's Jim Bertel has the story.
British police say Sakia Jones and Jack Merritt were the two people killed in Friday's knife attack on London Bridge. Cambridge University's Vice Chancellor Stephen Tube said in a statement that Jones had been part of the Learning Together program that was being celebrated when the attack broke out on Friday afternoon. He said the other person who died, Jack Merritt, was a course coordinator of the program and that one of the three people injured is a member of the university staff. They were part of a gathering at Fishmongers Hall near London Bridge to mark the fifth year of the social justice program. Attacker Usman Khan, a convicted terrorist who had secured early release from prison, was shot dead by police after he was restrained by civilians. Jim Bertel, VOA News.
Here are some of the stories we are following at voanews.com. Environment ministers and experts from nearly 200 countries are meeting in Madrid on Monday today for annual United Nations climate talks. Presided by Chile and hosted by Spain, the so-called COP25 follows a raft of alarming studies and real-life evidence of climate change's potentially catastrophic fallout. From the Spanish capital, Lisa Bryant reports for VOA that this might be the last year the U.S. is part of the talks. Thousands have marched to turn up the pressure on Hong Kong as North Korea's deadline also is approaching and the South is pushing for U.S. progress. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com. Environmental ministers, as we said, and experts from nearly 200 countries are meeting in Madrid today for the annual UN climate talks in Madrid, Spain. From the Spanish capital, we hear more now from Lisa Bryant, who reports for VOA that this could be the last year the U.S. is part of the talks.
Rising seas, shrinking ice caps, deadly floods, fires, and droughts. These aren't just future nightmares, but today's reality in many parts of our fast-warming world. More grim news this past week. The UN says greenhouse gases reached new records last year, despite global promises to slash them. Even if governments meet their current pledges, emissions may soar in the decades ahead to triple the 1.5 degree limit scientists say is crucial to avoid the most extreme effects.
The thing is that today the science is really clear. We have a maximum 10 years to act to fight global warming, and all scientists say that we are in a climate and biodiversity crisis.
This two-week conference sets the stage for 2020, the next five-year deadline for countries to update their emissions-cutting targets. Some key goals here: creating effective rules for a global carbon market, allowing countries to trade emissions reductions with each other, and finalizing financing for poorer countries to respond to climate change.
I think that we have enormous warning signs and enormous signs of progress at the same time, and enormous opportunity all at the same time.
One big negative for those here at the conference, one of the biggest greenhouse gas emitters, the United States, is scheduled to pull out of the Paris Climate Pact next November.
They're still at the table this year, but with much less leverage than would have otherwise been the case.
Others, like China and India, continue to rely on polluting industries, even as they adopt renewable energy. But climate action is going local. Cities and regions are coming up with green solutions. People are calling on their governments to do more.
The good news is that there is raising awareness, especially from young generations, on the fact that we can act and we have all the solutions to act.
The European Union is proposing a so-called Green Deal to make the region carbon neutral by 2050. Dozens of countries elsewhere have also pledged to increase their emissions-cutting goals. WRI's David Wascow points to another positive. The cooperation between Spain and Chile in organizing this conference, showing the kind of can-do spirit countries might need to reach ambitious climate change solutions going forward. For VOA News, Lisa Bryant, Madrid.
Well, meanwhile, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said Sunday that the world's efforts to stop climate change have so far been dangerously lagging, and there is a major risk that global warming could pass the point of no return.
Reach carbon neutrality by 2050 and reduce greenhouse gas emissions by 45% from 2010 levels by 2030. But let's be clear, until now, our efforts to reach these targets have been utterly inadequate.
Speaking before the start of the two-week conference, the UN chief said the world has the scientific knowledge and the technical means to limit global warming, but what's lacking is political will to meet the Paris Agreement targets.
Clear demonstration of increased ambition and commitment, showing accountability, responsibility, and leadership. In the crucial 12 months ahead, it is essential that we secure more ambitious national commitments, particularly from the main emitters.
Well, the impact of rising temperatures, including more extreme weather, is already being felt around the world with dramatic consequences for humans and other species. Guterres says we must stop our war against nature. You're listening to International Edition on VOA.
Our voices, we're talking about the news and issues you're talking about.
Sharing stories of development and growth across Africa, around the world, and in our lives. Topics that inform, empower,
and change the rules.
It's time for Our Voices with me, Heidi Adams Fitzpatrick.
And Hadiza Kiari.
And Ayan Bior.
And Orion Itangi Shaka.
Join us on Facebook at VOA Our Voices.
It's time for Our Voices.
The lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic, etc.
It is the beat.
The African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct.
And adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on The Voice of America, Mondays through Fridays, 0900 and 2000 Universal Time.
With David Bandy.
VOA's International Edition continues, well, Sunday, December 1st, World AIDS Day, when the illness first came to light some 40 years ago, or 40-plus years ago, and it was a death sentence back then. But since then, with education and advancements in science, it's become a disease that some 40 million people are living with. The yearly World AIDS Day observance was a way to make people realize AIDS is still with us, and despite advances, the epidemic is not over. VOA's Carol Pearson reports.
Communities around the world observe World AIDS Day with messages about awareness and prevention. The simplest method is always to use a condom during sex. In 2004, when health ministers first designated December 1st as World AIDS Day, they realized that, unlike other diseases, the HIV virus that causes AIDS could spread globally. Paul Kawada has been an AIDS activist since the very beginning, when people with AIDS died horrible deaths. He is still in the fight at NMAC, an organization formerly known as the National Minority AIDS Council.
And I was there in the early days. I was there when we both had to fight back and act out and also bury so many people that we loved.
Dr. Anthony Fauci has also been in the fight since the beginning. Fauci has been the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease since 1984. He's been involved in the development of treatments for HIV. Treatment is now so effective that if an infected person takes one pill a day, it's impossible to pass the virus to anyone else. 7 years ago, another drug became available that prevents uninfected people from getting the disease. It's called Truvada. Fauci says ending AIDS could be simple.
If you did those two things,
Treatment is prevention for those who are infected. Pre-exposure prophylaxis for those who are at risk. If you implemented that to its fullest, theoretically, you could end the epidemic just like that.
AIDS-related deaths are now down by more than 55% since the peak, but it's still with us. Kawada says gaps in treatment are the main reason.
We have to understand that HIV sits at the intersection of so much discrimination and stigma. First of all, it impacts predominantly people of color. Number two, it impacts predominantly gay men. Number three, it impacts predominantly poor people.
The majority of people with HIV in the U.S. are poor. The majority of people with HIV outside the U.S. live in low and middle income countries. Teenagers everywhere are at risk. They have little access to testing, health care, and counseling. And that's why Fauci says we need something else besides medication.
We're not going to eliminate HIV without a vaccine.
Fauci says the work on vaccines is promising. But right now, the best tools are still getting people tested, getting those who are positive on therapy, and getting those at risk of becoming infected on therapeutics, and treating HIV as a disease, not as a political or moral or social issue. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
This is Science in a Minute.
Scientists at the University of Massachusetts Medical School are reporting success in research that may someday help people see things at night that now require the use of very expensive night vision goggles. After injecting a special type of material called upconversion nanoparticles into mice's eyes, the researchers found that the little rodents were able to see in the near-infrared light range. The scientists say the night vision nanoparticles converts low-energy photons from near-infrared light into higher energy light mice and other mammals can see. They reported that the mice maintained their night vision abilities for at least 10 weeks after the injection. Before trying this on humans, the scientists want to improve the safety and sensitivity of the nanomaterials. Researchers presented their findings at a recent meeting of the American Chemical Society. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Daylight come and me want go.
Composer Irving Berge, who helped popularize Caribbean music and co-wrote the enduring Harry Belafonte hit, Deo, has died. The song he wrote in 1952 has been ubiquitous, appearing in everything from film and to the Broadway musical Beetlejuice to an E-Trade commercial, and it was even the wake-up call for astronauts on two space shuttle missions in the 1990s. The Songwriters Hall of Fame says Berge's songs have sold over 200 million records worldwide. His hits, like Jamaica Farewell, have been recorded by Belafonte, Jimmy Buffett, Carly Simon, and others. And Berge also served in an all-black U.S. Army battalion in World War II and used GI Bill funds to pay for music studios. At the Barbados Independence Day Parade on Saturday, Prime Minister Mia Amor-Motley announced that Berge had died Friday. And he then asked for a moment of silence for the Brooklyn, New York-born Berge, who wrote the lyrics to the national anthem of Barbados, his mother's homeland. Some of the lines in that anthem were, quote, "We write our names on history's page with expectations great, strict guardians of our heritage, firm craftsmen of our fate." Irving Berge was 95. You've been listening to International Edition. That's it for our show today, but you can always find us at voanews.com. We thank you so much for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Calvin Fowler. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a wonderful day.
Hello, this is James Butte, managing editor and host of VOA's Daybreak Africa show. Join us Monday through Friday at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC as we bring you the latest Africa news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Or you can call us on 001-202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. That's Daybreak Africa at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Next, an international public service announcement by the United States government.
Through its Rewards for Justice program, the U.S. Department of State is offering a reward of up to $10 million for information about two senior leaders of Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, or AQAP. The first reward is for up to $6 million for information leading to the identification or location of Sa'ad bin Atef al-Awlaki. The second is for up to $4 million for information leading to the identification or location of Ibrahim Ahmed Mahmoud al-Kosi. Al-Awlaki is the emir of Shabwa, a province of Yemen. He has publicly called for attacks against the United States and its allies. Al-Kosi, who was born in Sudan, is also known as Sheikh Kubeib al-Sudani and Muhammad Salaha Ahmed. He is part of the leadership team that assists the current emir of AQAP. Since 2015, he has appeared in recruiting materials and encouraged lone wolf attacks against the United States in online propaganda. Al-Kosi joined AQAP in 2014, but has been active in Al-Qaeda for decades and worked directly for Osama bin Laden for many years. The Rewards for Justice program is administered by the U.S. Department of State's Diplomatic Security Service. Since its inception in 1984, the program has paid in excess of $150 million to more than 100 individuals who provided information that helped bring terrorists to justice or assisted in preventing acts of international terrorism worldwide. If you have information on Sa'ad bin Atef al-Awlaki or Ibrahim Ahmed Mahmoud al-Kosi, contact the Rewards for Justice program via the website at www.rewardsforjustice.net, email to info@rewardsforjustice.net, or contact the regional security officer at the nearest U.S. embassy or consulate. All information will be kept strictly confidential, and relocation may be available for those providing accurate and credible, actionable information.
That was an international public service announcement by the United States government.
Crossings.
Join host Larry London.
Larry London.
On Border Crossings, VOA's only worldwide music request hour.
Oh.
Every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in for the biggest hits and amazing artists. Win prizes and get the latest news from exclusive celebrity interviews.
Ooh.
Send your requests to Facebook at VOA Larry London, Twitter at Border Crossings, or Instagram at Border Crossings VOA. Or call 202-619-2077 and have your favorite music played to the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal, only on The Voice of America.
This is VOA.